You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The belief is that the transfer portal can magically change your roster for the better, or maybe even for the worse when you enter the off season. In college football, we've been experiencing that for the last several years. We've had some early returns on the positive side and the negative side. And going into 2023, there are a lot of teams out there trying to improve themselves, but not everybody was able to do so after the first transfer portal window closed earlier this month. Hello, I'm Brendan Marcello. You're listening to the College Football Daily. It is Wednesday, January 25th. We're going to look much deeper here in the transfer portal with 24/7 Sports' Chris Hummer, who I call Professor Portal. Chris, we've seen the early returns from some teams able to just turn over their roster. USC obviously immediately comes to mind for some people and what they're able to do when Lincoln Riley came on board as head coach and brought in Caleb Williams and co. And then elsewhere, look at what LSU did this past season. They were able to supplement and complement some of the pieces they already had there in Brian Kelly's first season, and they reached the SEC championship game. So we just exited the first transfer portal window here, which was a 45-day period starting with that day or two after championship weekend for conferences. And a lot of teams have picked up a lot of names out there. And listen, we're going to talk about Colorado, I'm sure, here at some point. But quantity doesn't always necessarily mean high quality. But right now, give me a couple teams, maybe three teams that you really like their hauls right now and why.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to start with Florida State. They're no longer number one in our transfer portal rankings. LSU has passed them, but part of that has to do with quantity. Florida State, which is already building a national or a potential national title contender in 2023, added arguably the best player in the transfer portal in Fentrell Cyprus, a all-ACC cornerback from Virginia.
It's gonna 14 be pass breakups last season, top five in the country in that regard. Florida State's added some really good pieces to that defense, it seems like.
Absolutely. And what I really like about Florida State is not only do they have somebody like Fentrell Cyprus coming in, an all-impact corner, they loaded up along the lines of scrimmage, which is what you have to do if you want to win championships. They brought in Utah offensive tackle transfer Jermaine Byers, who's the number two offensive tackle in the 24/7 Sports transfer rankings. They brought in two top 10 linemen, Dale Jackson from Miami, Braden Fisk from Western Michigan, who's the number one overall interior lineman. They also brought in an edge rusher from South Carolina to bolster that group. It's a really strong transfer group all around. And I think Florida State's going to be starting something like 60% transfers next year in their starting lineup. So I think Florida State's a really interesting experimental point to see how transfers are going to work out long-term in college football.
Mike Norvell, the head coach there, was getting some criticism for that early in his tenure because the results weren't there. And this past season, winning 10 games, obviously that changes things. But you talk about transfer portal. Jared Verse was the top pass rusher in the portal a year ago, came from Albany to Florida State and lived up to the quote unquote hype, had 9 sacks this past season. And then you look at the pieces they have coming in this year. You mentioned the edge rushers they got coming in, and also Jaheim Bell, the tight end from South Carolina. And it's so heavy on transfers, and yet they've been able to keep this group together. Is that a Florida State thing? Is that happening more elsewhere? And we're just not talking enough about it? Or is this very difficult to kind of keep transfers on campus? And for that matter, build a roster that's primarily composed of transfers.
Yeah, I think some of us, I think still, and myself included, often think of transfers as short-term additions, short-term hole pluggers, but it's not really the case in this era of college football. Like, you have so many younger players entering the transfer portal who show up to your campus with multiple years of eligibility. And while Florida State has added some of those 1 and 2 year transfers, they've also added players with multiple years of eligibility. People forget, I think, Jordan Travis was a transfer. Came out from Louisville seemingly a decade ago now, and now he's one of the best quarterbacks in college football. We talked about that defensive line that Florida State's going to have. And like Fabian Lovett, I think, is another important name to mention. He's coming back, could have gone to the NFL. He was a transfer from Mississippi State, I believe, in 2020. So Florida State has not only added short-term pieces. I've said this before, but I think the transfer portal was a method of survival for Mike Norvell at first. Now it's a method of contention. He's just bringing in a higher level of transfer and also augmenting his high school recruiting gains with transfers. And it's turned into a thing where Florida State somehow juggled this like weird mix of like long-term transfers and key impact high school players. And it's created what I think is the best roster in the ACC going into next year.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. And it's going to be fascinating to watch Florida State and that hype going into next season. You mentioned LSU overtaking Florida State, their number one spot, 11 commitments out of the transfer portal right now. 8 4-star players, their average rating of 91. Florida State's average rating, by the way, just a bit higher at 91.4. But again, the quantity being able to outweigh the quality there, so to speak, with Florida State with 9 commitments. What makes LSU a winner and what's made them so doing so well here for Brian Kelly and really back-to-back transfer portal classes for him?
Yeah, absolutely. LSU is not really a place where you need help recruiting. You get first dibs on every single player who comes through Louisiana for the most part. And LSU is still recruiting top 10 classes. We saw this year with Brian Kelly's early returns in his first full recruiting class. But in the era of college football we are now, you'd be silly not to use the transfer portal to augment the roster. And Brian Kelly is still early in his tenure. Like, he's still trying to flip that roster to bring it to where it needs to be. And I think what stands out about this class is the defensive back group, yes, specifically cornerbacks. If you look at the transfer rankings and you're a top cornerback, you're probably playing for LSU. Denver Harris is the number 2 cornerback in our transfer portal rankings. Zy Alexander is the number 4. Deuce Chestnut's number 8. J.K. Johnson is a former top 50 recruit coming in from Ohio State. That's 4 of the top probably 12 cornerbacks in the 24/7 sports transfer portal rankings. And you're totally remaking that room if you're Brian Kelly. Obviously, that unit saw a lot of upheaval 2 years ago when everybody left after Ed Orgeron came in. They brought in a lot of transfers to plug some holes last year, but even some of those guys have moved on to the NFL. So this is a group, like we talked about earlier with Florida State, who's not only a short-term solution with guys like Deuce, yes, Chestnut, who might be heading to the NFL pretty quickly after this, but you've got guys like J.K. Johnson and Denver Harris, who still have at least 2 years of eligibility left to play for LSU. So I think LSU's really where we work that room. They've added a lot of depth along the defensive line. Omar Spates, the linebacker coming in from Oregon State, I think is one of the best overall players in the portal, one of the most proven players, at least. So it's been a really good group for LSU. And then I don't think anybody should forget about Aaron Anderson coming in from Alabama, former top 40 receiver prospect, could be the answer they need to replace Keyshawn Boutte after he unexpectedly left the program late.
That was quite the dramatic time period there in December. So who else should we really be talking about here in the transfer portal?
Yeah, winners is such a broad subject in this transfer portal era, because I think so many teams could have an argument. But I think
especially because the context of things. So some teams might only add like 6 guys, like a Notre Dame, which is a program record for them, by the way, 6 set transfers. But they got the type of guys they just need to fill some holes. And then you got programs like Colorado or Arizona State. They're absolutely trying to revamp their entire roster and they're signing 23 plus transfers.
Absolutely. And like, for example, I think I had 10 winners in an article I wrote earlier this week, kind of breaking down all the winners and losers from the transfer portal. I could have easily had 5 more. Like, I didn't include Wisconsin, like, for example. And that's a team that I think is in an interesting spot. They're resetting their roster to work for a very vastly different style of football with the air raid coming to Wisconsin. So they've had to do a lot of overhauling of things, but they're a winner. But in terms of like the high profile winners, I think you have to focus on USC or Auburn. Let's talk on USC for a second, just because, yeah, at least personally, I like the class a little bit better. USC has a lot of holes to fill, specifically on defense and the offensive line, and they did so aggressively. Jared Kingston coming over from Washington State's an immediate impact starter. Michael Tarquin coming over from Florida's an impact starter along the offensive line. They just added Ethan White from Florida as well. So they have a ton of instant impact starters along the offensive line. And then on defense, they've added impact players on every level. Anthony Lucas coming over from Texas A&M, former 5-star recruit. Jack Sullivan coming over from Purdue, a 4-star transfer in the portal. Mason Cobb, arguably Oklahoma State's best defensive player last year, coming in as a linebacker. He's going to be an immediate impact contributor. You have Christian Roland Wallace coming in from Arizona. He's a former All-Pac-12 player, 4-year starter with the Wildcats. They snatched him away from Arizona. And I haven't even mentioned some of the high profile offensive pieces they brought in. So it's been another really strong transfer group for Lincoln Riley as he tries to revamp USC in his image, like we're seeing Brian Kelly do at LSU.
Question is can Alex Grinch get that defense to play better? It's just been something with him, even going back to OU. It seems like as the season progresses, fundamentals and techniques start going out the window. Guys are taking bad ankles and obviously missing tackles, as we saw from USC in that Pac-12 championship game.
Yeah, I'm not here to make excuses for Alex Grinch. He gets paid very handsomely to do what he does. But I will say, if you chart the progression of his defenses, even going back to Washington State, it's usually a year two or year three thing for the roster to come into place the way he wants it to. He runs a pretty unique scheme. It's like that speed defense that he calls it, very turnover focused. And while last two years really of Oklahoma football were a disappointment under Lincoln Riley, the Oklahoma defense under Alex Grinch started to really play well for stretches there. So I think it could be better next year at USC, but if not, I think
they led the nation for most of the year in turnover margin at USC this past year. It was really a tremendous opportunistic defense.
Making up for a defense that couldn't tackle worth a lick. But if you're Alex Grinch, you're hoping to combine the two next year, and you're hoping some of the pieces that you brought in, along with younger players like a Damani Jackson, who opted to stay at USC despite some rumors, help elevate the program.
You mentioned Auburn. That's another program that was in dire need of a revamp, particularly in the trenches and the offensive line and defensive line. I'd have to go back and look at the numbers, but I think between the high school class and this transfer portal class so far, they signed something like 9 or 10 offensive linemen. And then not to mention the guys they brought in on the edge and the interior on that defensive front. What do you think of Hugh Freeze's first portal class going into this spring?
I think you hit the key idea. They got better in the trenches. You covered Auburn for a long time. Like, those Auburn teams, even if they didn't have the skill talent, even if they didn't have a quarterback, always seemed to have something along the defensive line, at least. They had a defense that was ready to play an SEC play and was a pretty dominant group. It wasn't that way last year. Auburn's O-line struggled to block. They were one of the worst run block units in the country. They were a very average pass block unit. And the Tigers' defensive line totally fell apart. They were 105th last year per PFF and rushing defense. They didn't generate much pressure. They had to get better on both sides. So Auburn did that. They added East Carolina center Avery Jones, who was one of my favorite players in the transfer portal. I think he's one of the best offensive linemen in the country. He's going to come in right away and start for Auburn. They also brought in two top 10 tackles in Dylan Wade from Tulsa and Gunnar Britton from Western Kentucky. They probably have three starters coming in from the portal on the offensive line. The defense isn't any different. Justin Rogers coming over from Kentucky. I don't know if he's lived up to expectations that he had as a recruit coming out, but he's still a top 10 defensive lineman for us.
He starts hot. He wears down quickly. They got to get him in the strength and conditioning program and get that cardio going, because if they do, he could end up being a monster potentially in his future.
Absolutely. There's a reason why he was a top 50 prospect for us at 24/7 Sports, and Kentucky definitely didn't want to lose him. So it's a big win. And they also added guys like Mosiah Nasil-Kite, Lawrence Johnson from Purdue, Elijah McAllister from Vanderbilt. I don't think any of those guys are like instant impact, like going to change your defense players, but Auburn needed to add depth along the defensive line, and it did that aggressively in the transfer portal this year.
You know, I just looked down, up and down our transfer portal team rankings, and the teams you just mentioned stick out. Listen, everybody, we are going to talk about Colorado here in a second. But what about SMU kind of creeping in there at number 6 as a group of 5 program? They got a couple of 4-star commitments. What's make SMU's class such a fast riser here in the transfer portal? Especially, goodness gracious, across town, so to speak. Yeah, TCU just absolutely hogging the headlines and deservedly so, with an amazing, magical season and runs the national championship game.
Yeah, and TCU is another team I should have mentioned earlier. They've had a really strong transfer class.
Yeah.
Team, and it's just like there's so many teams. But SMU is kind of like Miami Central, I guess, if you just wanted to add a U to the end of the SMU logo, which I've seen several staff members do on tweets. I think they have 5 former Hurricanes in their class right now, obviously with Coach Lashley's history there. So that makes sense. But I think SMU's just done a really good job from the beginning of the transfer portal process, led by their college scouting department, of knowing who they were going to target going into the portal and being really aggressive at adding talent. They were prepared for the portal in a way a few other teams have been. credit goes to their director of personnel, Alex Brown, in that regard. But they've just brought in a ton of impact players. That defense was really bad last year. I think it finished 105th nationally in yards allowed per play. Obviously, there was that game against Houston that caught a lot of headlines. SMU won that game, so you could be happy about it. But that defense had it.
You better. Your quarterback's responsible for 9 touchdowns. You better be winning the game.
Absolutely. And I think SMU's brought in 9 defensive transfers so far. Every single one of those players is going to be in the 2-deep. And I think the large majority of them have a chance to start. They're trying to totally reset that group. And that's what you have to do in this era. You have to bring in quality depth in the 2-deep. And then on offense, there's some just like really big names. LJ Johnson, former top 50 recruit coming in from Texas A&M. They're going to have a running back room that features LJ Johnson, Jalen Knighton coming in from Miami, and Kamar Wheaton from Alabama. That's going to be the most stacked G5 running back room in the country. They're former top 100 recruits all around. And then you've got impact offensive linemen coming in as well, like PJ Williams coming in from Texas A&M, Charles Woods from Missouri, who I think has NFL potential if you talk to people who are evaluating transfers. So it's a really, really strong group for SMU. And frankly, like SMU is pretty aggressive from an NIL standpoint. They don't get talked about it that way, but they have some advantages that other schools don't.
Yeah, we were talking about this off the air, but you know, the idea of maybe you try to get in the Jaden Rashada sweepstakes, considering he's a free agent now out there right now, and things fell through at Miami. And then, of course, the biggest fall through was at Florida with a reported $13 million contract, $11 million contract, and everything falling through there, and gets released from his letter of intent. Now he's on the free market, going to visit TCU, also visiting Arizona State. But SMU, we're told, not interested in looking at him, which is interesting considering, as you mentioned, SMU's deep pockets with their collectives, so to speak, out there. Much more on the winners and losers from the transfer portal, and I promise the job being done by Deion Sanders at Colorado after these messages.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, so I'm going to stay in the state of Texas, and we have to talk about losers. And I'm sorry, everybody. Not everybody could be a winner. Just ask me throughout elementary school. So Texas A&M, mass exodus. We know that. Everybody's been talking about it. They've been the butt of jokes this entire offseason. By my count, and this may have changed, 28 players have entered the transfer portal. I think 24 of them are scholarship guys. And here's the thing. 18 of those transfers are blue chip prospects, or were blue chip prospects out of high school, I should say. So 18 of your 24 were four-star or five-star players, including a pair of five-stars in the most recent 2022 class, which was the best recruiting class in history, according to the 24/7 Sports Composite. So where does A&M stand as a loser? And is this really going to hurt them tremendously going into next season? I mean, it has to get better after a 5-7 season, even after losing all those guys, right?
You know, it's funny. I didn't have Texas A&M as a loser when I did the article looking at winners and losers. And I think there's two different ways to look at losses in the transfer portal. One is volume. Obviously, it's the catchiest number. It's the flashiest number. It's the thing everybody can focus in on. Oh my God, you lost 26 players to the transfer portal. How terrible, right? Like, Florida's dealt with a lot of this too. But I think Florida and A&M both kind of fit in the same category of teams that lost a lot of players. And like, I need to point out that depth is important. Like, A&M, it's not ideal for A&M that they lost so much quality depth across its roster, but they didn't lose starters. I think 17 starters come back for Texas A&M next year. I don't think a single player they lost in the transfer portal was a starter, right, outside of Denver Harris and potentially Anthony Lucas, but those guys were suspended. And the top players A&M lost to the portal were guys that were suspended. I'm talking about Denver Harris, Mopouye, PJ Williams, Anthony Lucas, like guys who are already likely not going to be on the roster, Chris Marshall, guys that have gotten suspended midseason. So you're talking about losing high quality prospects and high quality potential, but nobody that was a really strong contributor on the roster that wasn't causing issues off the field within the program. So while Texas A&M did lose a ton and didn't lose a ton of quality, in fact, I would argue Texas A&M bringing in a guy like Tony Grimes from North Carolina added more contributors in the portal that it lost. So I don't necessarily consider Texas A&M a loser this offseason, even if they did, on the surface, lose a lot of players. And Florida's kind of in the same boat.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy you mention that, because people just look at the hard number, like a rating. They don't look at the context, as we mentioned, like the quality of players, what their needs were, and the players they are losing. Like, one, where are they going? But secondly, what were they doing on your roster previously, as you just mentioned? The transfer portal class for Texas A&M, as we record this right now, ranks 52nd nationally. And you're like, oh, yuck. But the average rating is 91.5, which might be number one, or at least in the top two nationally when you actually look at average rating. So you're exactly right. You just hit on it there. And I think people, when you look at these transfer rankings, especially in the portal, because portal classes, and heck, for that matter, now that I'm talking about it, recruiting classes, we have lifted that restriction on 25 scholarship players. You just have to hit your 85 scholarship limit mark now. So you can sign 40 high school kids if you want to, as long as you stay under that 85 scholarship limit. But we're not necessarily playing on the same playing field anymore when it comes to numbers. So as we mentioned, you've got a school like Arizona State, which has 26 or 27 transfer portal additions, which is astronomical. And then you have Notre Dame, which, if you just said program record transfers coming in, you're like, oh boy, they brought in a lot. No, it's six guys is a program record for Notre Dame. And then you look at blue bloods like an Alabama, or for that matter, Georgia, which just don't rely on transfers all that much, because they get those five-star blue chip prospects in as high school kids. They stay on campus, they develop them, and everything's working out. Chris, still, you have to build your roster based off of identifying talent in high school and developing them and keeping them on campus still. That's still got to be the core of a championship winning program.
Absolutely. I mean, like, I think any team taking 10 plus transfers in the portal would much rather be Georgia or Alabama or Ohio State.
So for example, like LSU, don't you think their numbers are probably going to drop here in like a year or two, those transfer portal numbers? Absolutely.
They should, yeah. If you're recruiting the way you can at a blue blood like that, you should not be taking more than a couple transfers every cycle, because that just means you're not doing a good job developing and you have holes in your roster. What we're seeing schools like Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State do is their strategy is more retention. You're paying to keep your, through NIL, you're paying to keep your two deep intact. Schools like Florida State don't really have that benefit to this point, because they're not bringing in top 10 class after top 10 class. So they have to go in the portal, USC, LSU. So the goal is still to have Georgia's roster. Georgia's roster, if all those guys in the transfer portal, would probably be like 50 of the top 100 transfers for a reason. Like, you want to have the top players coming out of high school.
All right. So we've been buttering enough people up. Give me a loser or two here. We got to at least have a loser or two.
Oh, man. I would say there are far more winners than losers in the transfer portal offseason, because it's hard. I think, especially as a Power 5 school, unless you're losing multiple starters, like, it's hard to get worse, because you should be getting better because players want to come to you. But not everybody's had that. Oklahoma State's definitely a loser. depending on how you want to calculate it, I think they've had anywhere from 7 to 9 starters leave in the transfer portal. That includes 4-year starting quarterback Spencer Sanders going to Ole Miss, starting running back Dominic Richardson, 3 of the team's 5 leading receivers, and you could argue the best player on every level of their defense went in the transfer portal as well. So it has been a rough offseason at Oklahoma State, and I'm sure Oklahoma State fans would like to push back that they did add some players in the transfer portal to make up for that, but Alan Bowman is not a replacement for Spencer Sanders. Like, I'm sorry. Like, Oklahoma State might survive via the transfer portal making up for some of the players they lost, but they had a Big 12 contender going into next year at Everybody State, and now they don't. And they are definitely a transfer portal loser. I think you have to look at Arkansas, a school I know you're very familiar with, as a transfer portal loser. The Razorbacks lost key players all over their defense. Jordan Dominick going in the portal, who had come over from Georgia Tech just the year before. I believe he led the team in tackles for loss. Arkansas fans would probably argue with me a little bit on it, but Jalen Cantillon, Miles Slusher, not ideal to lose to the transfer portal. Both teams went to Power 5 rosters and were some of the better players when healthy on Arkansas's team. I'm thinking of Keetron Jackson, arguably the most talented wide receiver on the roster, going
that's
to Baylor.
That was a big loss, I've been told. The people there in the program did just that was quite the gut punch.
Absolutely. And I think you could say the same thing about Trey Knox going to South Carolina.
Yes.
It's another guy they didn't want to lose. Arkansas is another team, like, you could argue, yeah, you added some key pieces in the transfer portal, but you're losing 5 to 7 guys you didn't want to lose. And in my opinion, that makes you a loser in this cycle.
And you couple that with losing 5 assistant coaches, including both of your coordinators. And listen, we talk about unique, and unique is a word overused, but Kendall Briles is unique with his offense, and him leaving Arkansas, now bringing in Dan Enos from Maryland, that offense is going to look different, and it's not going to look like a Kendall Briles offense. And so it's they're not hitting reset at Arkansas, but it certainly seems like they've had to reboot the system, and they're trying to get everybody up to speed as they head into spring practice. Any other losers you kind of look out there? I know South Carolina was maybe bordering on that, but I like some of the pieces they brought in too.
No, I had South Carolina as a loser, and that's another situation where, like, yeah, South Carolina brought in some really nice transfers, and it wasn't a total loss for them. It really isn't a total loss unless you're somebody like Kent State, who lost your 8 best players on the roster. But if you're South Carolina and you look at our transfer rankings, I think they lost 4 players in our top 50. So you're not necessarily talking about the best players on your roster. Like, I don't think anybody would argue Jordan Birch was the best player on the team or Jaheim Bell was the best player on the team, but they were one of a few handful of best players on the roster, at least most talented. And to lose those 2 plus Marshawn Lloyd, which was definitely a gut punch.
That's a big one.
And Gilbert Edmond, who the edge rusher I was talking about earlier, who went to Florida State. Like, those are 4 significant losses for South Carolina. And I mean, part of it's like, I mean, it's kind of the underlying factor with everything here. Part of it's NIL. Like, I think South Carolina lost those 4 people to schools with very active NIL arms, Oregon, Florida State, and USC. So it's a gut punch on the field. And it's also kind of a bit of a reality check for where South Carolina is at compared to the rest of college football in terms of the off-field stuff.
I'm glad you brought up Kent State, because we don't talk enough about Group of 5 schools, and especially Kent State. But Coach Sean Lewis, I think, is beloved by a lot of folks, including us, for what he does as a play caller. Sean Lewis, the head coach at Kent State, now off to Colorado, called the offense for Deion Sanders. And you mentioned it. They were decimated by the transfer portal. And not just decimated, but you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 kids, or should I say 6 kids, go to Power 5 programs. I was forgetting that UCF is moving up to the Big 12 next season. So Kent State, how are they doing, and how do they kind of try to, I mean, listen, there's only so much you can do when you're at that level of football, right?
Yeah, I mean, Kent State's fine unless you need things like quarterback, running back, your 3 starting receivers, both your starting tackles, and an all MAC cornerback. Good. All of those players are going to the Power 5 level, except for Marcus Cooper is going to Ball State, which is another blow because you're losing your starting running back to somebody in the conference. So Kent State has really struggled this offseason. And really, the MAC in general has gotten very hard in the transfer portal outside of really Ohio, which is why I think Ohio is a pretty big favorite going to next year. Anyway, we're not here to, I guess, not here to discuss MAC standings for next season. But yeah, it's a really tough place as a G5 program right now. Your best players are constantly getting poached. I'm thinking of UTEP. They lost Tyron Smith to Texas A&M, their 1,000-yard wide receiver. I'm thinking of Ball State losing their starting running back to UCLA. I'm thinking of Bowling Green losing Jordan Anderson, all-conference safety, to UCLA as well. There are examples like that all over college football. And in some cases, like, strong culture is going to keep players on your roster. In some cases, NIL is going to keep players on your roster. But it's harder than ever, especially with the amount of tampering going on, for G5 schools to maintain and keep their best players. And it's been a really rough offseason for some notable G5 programs losing key contributors to the portal.
Okay. I promise we talk about Colorado, and we're going to end it with Colorado. All right. You've got Colorado as a winner. As I mentioned, goodness gracious, 23 commitments. And of course, all led by Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders. So what makes this class good, and what makes it potentially a class that could propel Colorado maybe into a bowl game next season?
Yeah. I don't know if I want to go that far.
Oh, come on. They can get to a bowl game, right? They could do it. Come on.
I mean, the Pac-12 is really good next year, like really good. And then I think they also get TCU to open the year, or like the second
week. Season opener.
Yeah. So I think this class is really good because Colorado went 1-11 last year, and literally anybody who could be in the two deep is a positive addition, which is why Colorado taking 23 transfer portal players is not something I even bat an eye at, because they needed to get better everywhere. What makes this class really good is because they have like upper level talent at certain positions coming in. Jordan Dominick, we mentioned earlier, leaving Arkansas, is an edge rusher who can play anywhere in the country. Travis Hunter is clearly somebody who can play anywhere in the country. And you put him next to Cormani McClain, who I know is not a transfer. And even the high-powered offenses in the Pac-12 are going to have a tough time throwing at Colorado's top two corners. You got guys like Miles Slusher coming in from Arkansas. You have Sadeo Torre coming over from Arkansas State, an all-conference tight end. You have Jimmy Warren coming in from USF, one of the best wide receivers in the transfer portal. Shedeur Sanders is a big upgrade at quarterback for Colorado, no matter what you think of Shedeur coming in. So they have added necessary pieces everywhere. I don't think it's going to transform Colorado overnight. This is not going to be a Jackson State situation where Deion Sanders almost instantly runs the table. But this roster should be better next year because of the transfer portal. And that makes Colorado a winner. And I know Deion Sanders is not the head coach there, so we don't mention him as often. But Kellen Dillingham has done a very similar thing in Arizona State. I believe they brought in 24 transfers so far. Not quite as high profile as guys like Travis Hunter, but some really nice pieces. So I think those two Pac-12 schools bringing in 20-plus transfers should be much, much better next year than they were a season ago.
Pac-12 is going to be scary good next year, I feel. And it's because of the amazing loads they've got there at quarterback. And by the way, the Pac-12 historically has always been a conference has had good quarterbacks, and it's always been like West Coast kids or kids they brought in from high school. But the majority of these top tier quarterbacks in the Pac-12 going into next season, transfers. Mentioned at Colorado, Oregon State with DJ Uiagalelei, Caleb Williams, a Heisman winner at USC, Bo Nix at Oregon. It's incredible how even the Pac-12, which has had a lot of homegrown talent at quarterback over the years, they can still maintain that quarterback reputation, but now they're doing so through the transfer portal and bringing kids from all across the country.
Absolutely. A much more nomadic sport than it was even 5 years ago.
It's crazy. I don't understand how anybody keeps track of it, let alone you, when you've got how many kids we know that in their transfer portal so far. We have any idea? It's an insane amount.
I think we've had just under 1,500 players enter since December 5th.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah. So I think we're just shy of 2,000 FBS. I don't know the exact number offhand, but quite a few.
And we have one more window coming up, a 15-day window, or a two-week window, I should say. And that one will be fast and furious as well. And these teams are not done looking, especially even some of these Power 5 programs that might even need quarterbacks. I'm looking at some SEC teams right now. So, Chris Hummer, thank you so much for joining us. For our producer, Lance Glenn, I'm Brennan Marcello. Thanks for listening to the College Football Daily. We'll talk to you again on Friday.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount+.